Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments then. How our popular Latin lover goes from speaking of lynxes to the command of language of two popes from our recent past. And shining the spotlight on two anniversaries, Assisi 20 years on and 60 years on, the ordination to the priesthood of a Pole who would later be elected Pope. Well, thanks very much for joining me once again. As mentioned a moment ago, I'd like to begin today by taking a look at two anniversaries connected to the same person. You may be pleased to hear that he is the late Karol Wojtyła, better known as the Polish-born pontiff John Paul II. The first anniversary linked to his memory goes back 20 years, to October 1986. To that day of prayer for peace in Assisi. You may recall how, in an unprecedented move in the history of the Catholic Church, this Roman pontiff called together in the remote Umbrian hillside town, linked forever to the figure of Saint Francis, leaders from different religious traditions to pray, in the respect of each individual faith, for peace. The reason you may just remember is that the international media gave this inspiring, and if you don't mind me adding, an incredibly colourful event, a huge amount of coverage, realising it was a milestone in the history of interreligious dialogue. A milestone the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue is making sure is not forgotten by commemorating 20 years on by means of a youth meeting with the goal of passing on to new generations, once again from different religious traditions across the world, the spirit of Assisi. Earlier this year, in a letter to the local bishop there, Pope Benedict XVI explained the deeper meaning of that first day of prayer for peace of 1986. Quote, "The people of different religions who prayed there gave witness that the language of prayer does not divide, but unites, representing a key element towards an effective way of teaching people from different cultures and religions how peace hinges on friendship, shared acceptance, and dialogue." Unquote. The second anniversary I wish to touch on today in a special way is the young Karol Wojtyła's ordination to the priesthood, which took place 60 years ago on All Souls. It was 1946 when this celebration would bring him on the path to leading the Catholic Church for over a quarter of a century. It's an anniversary I'd like to remember in a very personal manner by bringing you echoes of that era, marked by suffering and dramatic events, in an effort to gain some insight into the personality of this man who, in those years when discretion was the price of religious survival, would not even let people address him as priest. Stay tuned as I bring you the witness of some of those who personally knew him.
In We were forbidden to have any culture, any education whatsoever outside elementary education. And we had schools and universities in clandestinity, including university and maturity exams and concentration camp.
That was the world the future Pope grew up in, the same one remembered by Polish Countess Wanda Jabuszyckańska.
Czechoslovakian border as a young bishop and passed the border, and he was arrested by the Czechoslovak police. He likes very much the mountains, and oh yes, and he used to go a lot with the students. And they called him uncle because sometimes he couldn't even show he was a priest. He just went with them as a good uncle.
I would like to offer my greetings and my blessing not only to you, but to all your colleagues throughout the world.
And when the newly elected Pope met with the press for the first time in his pontificate, a mysterious lady cried out, "Wujek," uncle in Polish. Professor Stanisław Grigiel, a one-time personal friend of Karol Wojtyła, was at that press conference.
Il Papa passa, ma non la vede, e lei, non sapendo cosa era, gridò, zio, in polacco.
Journalists at the press conference were startled by this Polish lady who suddenly addressed the Pope as uncle. What they didn't know was that this was a common way of addressing a Catholic priest in communist Poland, where to identify him openly as father was far too risky. The mystery lady had taken part in one of the secret retreats held by Uncle Wojtyła up in the mountains. In those years of religious intolerance, discretion became the price of religious survival. We were forced to keep such activities secret because the police were always on the lookout for us. Had they found out what was really going on, we would all have had to pay a very high price.
Ma sempre nascondendosi perché era vietato e la polizia ci cercava e questo era pericoloso.
This was the scenario in which the young Karol Wojtyła began his priestly life. His personal life prior to this had taught him to live with suffering.
I don't remember very well his mother because she died when we were still little. The much older brother who died when we were about 11 or 12. The brother was a doctor, medical doctor.
Jerzy Kluger went to school in Wadowice with Lolek, as the future Pope was familiarly known.
And contracted scarlet fever.
Scarlet fever.
Yes, and died. It was a big tragedy. And, you know, he came only a few years after his mother died. And they were left in two of them, the father and the son. And father was then already retired from the Polish army. So he lived with his son there in that little flat near to the church and was sacrificing his whole life to that boy.
Lei ha menzionato il millennio, Papa del millennio. Penso che le esperienze Auschwitz e Colima, che si chiamano...
I believe that what makes him so much the Pope of the third millennium is his experience of suffering. The fact that he was touched so personally by the era in which he lived. Many of his close friends at school were tortured, deported to Siberia, or interned in concentration camps. It was this indirect experience of Auschwitz or Coema that inspired him to want to save others from suffering, to defend the rights of the human person.
No one born into this world is free from human frailty, whether it be physical, emotional, or spiritual. Each of us must personally come to terms with this frailty.
We don't talk very often about it. I mean, he, I suppose, wants to avoid this because, for me, those years are really very painful, those memories. I mean, I'm Jewish. And my father was the last president of the Jewish community in Wadowice. And during the war, we did a tremendous mistake that we went into the army, that means my father and myself, and my mother, my sister, and the grandmother, they were left there. We thought that the Germans won't do anything to them because they're women. Instead, they all died in Auschwitz.
The Cardinal Archbishop Krakow took me personally to Auschwitz. He accompanied me. On many other occasions, he would arrange for me to go here and there to see this and explore that. But he took me personally to Auschwitz and spoke to me about it. He understood fully what Auschwitz was and the symbolism of it. And we went together and we knelt and prayed together in that spot.
American Cardinal William Wakefield Baum was one of the cardinals who took part in the conclave that elected the Polish Pope. He cherished memories of time spent with Cardinal Wojtyła in Poland only months before he was elected Pope.
Cardinal Archbishop of Krakow was the preacher of the day, and he preached this magnificent, stirring homily, delivered with great passion. I couldn't understand Polish, but there was a priest always with me to interpret, so I knew what he was saying. He was encouraging these working men to be true to their faith and to stand tall and be courageous. He was a great defender of the rights of the working man, of ordinary citizens, vis-a-vis the powers of this world, the political powers, especially in Poland. It was not a revolutionary speech, but it was a speech that was meant to put steel into the minds, the hearts of these working Polish men. That day there were at least 300,000 of them present for this great mass in a field. So that, of course, gave me another insight into his personality. Cardinal Wojtyła of Krakow was one of the most prominent cardinals in the world, and much admired, looked up to, I'd say, by his brother cardinals.
Annuncio Vobis Gaudium Magnum. Habemus Papam.
There was more than one session of the conclave, but I was fortunately on St. Peter's Square when the announcement was made. It was one of those wonderful October evenings that you get in Rome. A beautiful, cloudless sky. By that time, at 8 o'clock or so, it was getting dark, dusk, and St. Peter's Square is...
Vatican journalist Arthur Baum.
Impression, you can only know anyone who's actually seen it. And there again, the conclave ended. In that atmosphere, we were told that once more we had a new pope. And we listened intently for his name, Karol, Charles. And then came the name Wojtyła.
Eminentissimum ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Carolum, Sancte Romane Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Wojtyła.
And that left us all completely floored. We thought, someone from Africa? Who could it be? And it took some time for the news to get round that it was actually a man from Poland. And then he himself came out and made his first speech to the people. And used the words himself. He says, this time they've chosen a pope who comes from afar. And he went on and said, but I'll do my best now to speak to you in your Italian language. And he corrected it and said, no, in our Italian language. If I make mistakes, you can correct me. And that sort of set the tone, which everyone knows now from his pontificate.
Anche non so se potrei bene spiegarmi nella vostra, la nostra lingua italiana, se mi sbaglio. Se
se mi sbaglio mi corrigerete.
I hope you found this program interesting. My thanks go in a special way to all those who personally knew the late Pope and shared with me their own memories. Meanwhile, here in the Vatican, mellow autumn sunshine for scientists attending a meeting technically known as the Plenary Assembly of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. Just imagine these scientists, a select group of them, reaching here from across the world, Catholics and non-Catholics alike, gathered deep in the quiet of the rambling and manicured Vatican gardens to discuss predictability in science, its accuracy and limitations. In no other place than the stillness of a centuries-old mid-Renaissance masterpiece signed by the famous architect of that period, Piero Ligorio. It's the Casina Pius IV, named after its patron pope, and decorated with stunning stucco work outdoors and elaborate frescoes indoors, inspired, as often happens here in Rome, both by the pagan and the Christian worlds. So while these eminent men and women meet to discuss the predictability and accuracy of science over complex issues, on things especially relevant to modern society, such as, for example, climate change and its potential effect in triggering earthquakes and fallout from skies, or indeed in provoking pandemics, such as bird flu or the SARS virus, I thought I'd step back from these anguishing issues that affect us all. Only to briefly spin the tale of this age-old pontifical academy, once known as Lincei, or Lynxes. And I do so by respecting our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover, who explains this, and goes on to much more. I'd like to speak to you about the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, Roots in the Past and Eye to the Future. That's the subject of our conversation today. What is the Pontifical Academy of Sciences in Latin?
What is the Pontificia Academia Scientiarum? It's very simple. Pius the 11th, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, didn't he do that?
Roots in the Past.
Radices in Praeterito. Et prospectus in futurum tempus. Well, you can say that, and that's easy.
It grew out of the Academia dei Lincei.
Which had nothing to do with the church, of course.
No.
But I mean, in that sense, and yeah, certainly they wanted a specialized
group there. 1603. The Academia dei Lincei, how would you translate that into Latin?
You know, Linceus, yeah.
Lincei means lynx.
Yeah.
The animal, to indicate the sharpness of wit of the scientists.
Of the eyes, of lynx eyes.
The eyes.
Yeah, that was smart. I mean, that was clever. That these guys were supposed to have sharp vision.
How'd you say that?
To
in
see
Latin?
Things, you know, acium, acerimam habere debebant. So that's why they call them the lynx people.
It was the earliest of all modern scientific academies, wasn't it?
What, the Lincei?
Yeah, the Lincei.
Yeah.
Now, we know that it's been granted a charter of foundation by the Pope, who founded Vatican Radio, Pope Pius XI, on the 28th of October, 1936. Well, we know that. But what I wanted to...
This is the pontifical academy. Yeah.
This grew out of the academy.
Mm.
Academia. I'm just indicating the popes who were involved with the Academy of Science. Pope Pius IX, who was elected in 1846... was very attentive to science, wasn't he? No?
Yeah, I am. Those things were happening in those days fast.
Mm. But he had problems because the political stability of the papal state was disrupted, no?
Mm.
In 1870. How do you say that in Latin?
Well, peruptest. Pax statuum pontificiorum.
Do they speak in Latin, the scientists who belong to this?
Oh, I don't know. It's up to them. Maybe some would, like foreigners. They could carry on a little conversation at the coffee bar or something. I don't know.
Coffee bar?
Yeah, in Termopolio is the bar. I don't know. I don't know. It depends on whether they're capable of it or not. I don't know.
Talking about bars, During the Vatican Council, there were two bars under the Cattedra Petri in St. Peter's Basilica.
Mm.
One was called Jonas and one called Barabbas.
Really?
What do you know about that?
I just thought there was one in the one corner there. I didn't know there were two. Maybe on both sides. Yeah. I know they set the thing up, you know, and like took off a corner of St. Peter's.
Do you think they would have spoken in Latin at those?
Well, in those days, certainly they did. And okay. The bishops among themselves. And Pericles and Felici and all these other guys directed the whole council in Latin. From the pulpit up there, Felici, for 4 years, gave instructions at 10 o'clock we'll meet, or tomorrow is a free day, and all this other stuff. He was announcing everything in Latin. Now you can't do that anymore. You saw in the Synod of Bishops, they said as soon as someone would start Latin, the bishops would put on earphones for a translation. Huh. Of course, I imagine the Pope and all these people, they presume that all these scholars know Latin, which I think is, a false presumption, because they don't.
You were speaking about translations at the Council. There were no simultaneous translations at the Council. How do you say simultaneous translation?
Interpretatio, simultanea interpretatio.
And expressions like press conference.
Yeah, that's all right. Colloquium cum scriptoribus diurnarius, that you can say.
Editorial process?
Edendi rationes.
Emendation.
That's all right. Emendatio is Latin anyway.
Electronic voting system?
Electrica suffragandi via. That's easy.
Reporting on the council where bishops were a dime a dozen. How'd you say that?
A dime a dozen. Well, I can say a dime a dozen. Duodicim numulova venibant. 12 were for sale for a penny.
During the council, there was one cardinal who had his microphone shut off because he went over time.
During the synod, you mean?
No, during the council.
Vatican II.
Vatican II. Cardinal Ottaviani.
Oh, really?
Had his microphone shut off because he went over time. How do you say that?
Well, excessit tempus. Et interclusa est altissima eius tuba. His speaker was shut off. Interclusa est.
The story goes he was so offended that he didn't attend the sessions for a while. And the little story going around Rome, which is one of those little jokes, which was probably told in Latin, I don't know, was that he took a taxi and he said to the taxi driver, "Al concilio," and the taxi driver took him to Trent.
Oh, no. I mean, all the way up to Trent.
How do you say all that?
Ach, that's silly. As though there's only one, I know, there's only one council, the Council of Trent. Bah, that's ridiculous, of course. But anyway.
How'd you say that in Latin?
Es absurda fabella.
Absurd. Absurd tale.
Story, yeah, tale.
What are your memories of the council? Did you ever see the bishops passing Time magazine along
the way? Well, we didn't. I was a student in those days. I saw them go in and we followed every day. That was the exciting stuff about the council. We have like a resume, you know, like in the Observatory Romano. This bishop said this and that.
In Latin.
That was in Italian.
Already?
I mean, yeah, there was just the journalists in the Observatory Romano would just, you know, give a little, you know, 10 bishops spoke today and each what each one said. But, I mean, it was an incredible, exciting time. I mean, things were just happening and being said and that were inconceivable. I mean, people just didn't talk that way and the problems didn't exist, you know, before, and all of a sudden they existed. I mean, to have some bishop get up and say something, which today would be old stuff, you know? But in those days, it was incredible. You know, maybe we should let some lay people read scripture from the pulpit. Ah! You know, that kind of stuff. Well, no one ever heard of that before, and so that was all
interesting. How do you say that in Latin?
Ante anumquam talia audivarat quisquam. No one had ever heard that stuff before. Well, that's what I remember about the council. And of course, we started getting these things in school, you know. As the documents were issued, then the next year, we would have conference or have classes on these documents. And so, it was wonderful. I was kind of looking back, you know, where have all the flowers gone?
How do you say, where have all the flowers gone?
Qua vierunt flores omnes.
Doesn't mean anything in Latin.
No. Well, they had poetry and they had the, you know, last rose of summer. The Romans had that kind of stuff.
I'm sure it doesn't mean anything. Where have all the flowers gone?
No. That wouldn't kind of make an impression.
It was a mammoth task, the council, wasn't it?
Really? That's another thing. To look at those documents and how this was written and rehashed and discussed and everything else. How'd you say
mammoth task?
Ingens opus. Opus ingens. Immensum. Interminatum opus. To think of it. And then between the councils, these things were redone according to, you know, the voting and the suggestions of the fathers. This went on for years. Really, you have to give them credit, absolutely. And the Pope, and following all this, and then they had to promulgate all this stuff, and I would say make sure that it was put into effect.
Oh. What were the two popes of the councils Latin like?
Well, both. John, he was the old diplomat and everything else. He just took it for granted. Paul VI, of course, was
more subtle.
Finer. Education and more subtle and so forth and so on. But people don't realize in those days the knowledge of Latin was just kind of, it's like anything.
Taken for granted.
Well, absolutely.
How do you say taken for granted?
Pro concesso. Summe bater lingua latine cognitio. Everyone knew Latin.
Okay, give me two words in Latin to describe John the 23rd's knowledge of the language, and two words to describe Paul the VI. Beginning with John the 23rd. Well, you said he was a diplomat.
Usitata latinitatis consuetudo, a normal custom of Latin. That's what he did.
And Paul the VI?
Amplior latinitatis cultus, as a scholar, you know. But as I say, in those days, you might fail in theology, but everyone in the world knew Latin. People don't realize how much has been lost.
So how can we look at Latin with our roots in the past and an eye to the future?
I don't know what you're going to do.
How can you say that in Latin?
I don't know what.
Looking at Latin with our roots in the past.
Linguam Latina respicientes, cum veteribus radicibus et prospectu in posterum, I can say it. And with a view to the future. But I don't know what kind of a future there's going to be.
With lynx's eyes.
Oculus lynceis. Lynceis oculus, that's where they got the lynx from. They're supposed to be so clever.
Sharp eyes.
Oh, yeah. Everyone, that was proverbial.
A huge thank you there to our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite father, Reginald Foster, and he's currently working in the Vatican as the Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbury.
Laudator Jesus Christus.